Our final case this morning is In Re Interest of Lizabella R.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Maureen Monahan. I am an attorney for the biological mother, Elizabeth. This case is before the court because the mother's parental rights to Lizabella and Jose were involuntarily terminated at trial. The fact pattern of this case is somewhat unusual in that she, at the time that Lizabella was injured, she was had been arrested and was in jail in Iowa. Lizabella was injured. This case was filed, and Lizabella placed in protective custody. The mother then was released on pretrial release, pending a number of services, completed those services, and then was living on her own in the community. During that time, she did a significant number of services, including being very attentive to Lizabella's developmental needs, medical needs, learning how to parent her, and doing a number of services. She also gave birth to another child, Jose, in February of 2015. Who was not filed on, and the testimony shows that the case manager at the time said he wasn't at risk for harm, there was no reason to remove him, the mother was fully capable of parenting him and taking care of him. We had adjudication in May, which is almost 8 or 9 months after the original filing for a variety of reasons. The mother did plead no contest at that time. The children remained in custody. A couple days later, she had her trial in federal court in Iowa, and she was convicted and subsequently sentenced, and currently that sentence is on appeal. I believe it's due back sometime this month, but I have not received word as to what has happened with that appeal. The court, in order...
Is that in the record?
I believe it's on appeal. As far as the appeal, I don't think so. But as far as at the adjudication, we knew she was going to trial for federal, and at that time we thought she was going to get probation. But she did not.
10 years, right?
That is correct. So the state filed a motion to terminate parental rights, and as the justices know, the state has to prove both one of the statutory grounds as well as best interest. They filed subsection 2, 6, and 7. Subsection 6 essentially says that the parent failed to complete a court order plan. When you look at the record, there never was a court order plan. The significant amount of time it took between the initial filing and then adjudication, the mother completed so many services as the case worker testified. The court took notice in orders that the mother had done a number of things. And then basically after an adjudication ordered her to have visits and to continue to take drug tests.
Does the record reflect where she's incarcerated?
I don't think so, because she was incarcerated after.
Okay.
You know, one of the case managers may have testified that she was incarcerated in Minnesota.
Okay. Thank you.
Because they would have to contact her there. The subsection 6 just doesn't apply because there never was a court order claim.
The services that she did complete, were those voluntary?
Yes, the pre-adjudication, yes.
Okay.
Since there was no court ordered plan, subsection 6 simply doesn't apply. She's just not, there's no clear and convincing evidence. She failed to complete the plan she was never ordered to do. Subsection 2 and 7 were also found true. Subsection 2 basically says that a parent has to substantially and continuously or repeatedly neglected or refused to give the juvenile or sibling of the juvenile necessary parental care and protection. Again, if we look at that period of time when she was not incarcerated, the record of both case managers testified to the numerous services. In fact, she visited 3 to 5 times a week, went to the medical providers to learn how to parent Lizabella and take care of her, so she would have better care. And basically, Lizabella stayed in care because of her own medical needs versus being potentially placed with Lizabella, placed with the mother. She, the mother, during some of that pretrial time, was at drug treatment. A residential so there's just no evidence that she continuously or repeatedly refused to give care to her child in this situation.
What about the fact that her incarceration prevents her from providing any care for these children?
Your Honor, if that is true, and I know that there are several court cases that talk about incarceration preventing us to do that, then we're really just saying that incarceration is the reason for terminating parental rights, preventing her from doing this. And while there is case law that says incarceration can be a factor, it cannot be the only factor. And I think the testimony of the case managers, and even the county attorney at one point in asking the question said, admittedly, she's a good caretaker of these children when not incarcerated, that the only reason they're in jail is because she's incarcerated. It can't be the only factor for proving any statutory grounds or best interest.
So what happens? Say we reverse it.
Yes.
What happens to these kids if mom's really going to do 10 years?
Well, first of all, Isabella's injuries are so severe that it's most likely she would not be adopted, that we'd probably pursue a guardianship from just the red tape that the child adopted, where there's kind of serious risk in the back of mind for Social Security, development of disabilities, all that stuff. It is a logical thing for that child to go into a guardianship. And it would be highly unlikely to find a parent who would adopt under those circumstances knowing all that red tape issue, because you don't want to have adaptive services for this child.
What about Jose?
Sorry?
What about Jose?
Jose, and again, you know, there are thousands of people in jail who have children in care who we could execute guardianship just like any other child whose parent or parents are not available. We don't file on every person who is incarcerated. Isabella was not incarcerated until, you know, unfortunately, the boyfriend of the mother's sister injured her. We don't file on everybody who goes to jail, nor should we. In this case, my client went to jail, just like thousands of other people. She left her child with her sister. She finds out her child got injured. When she's out, she did everything she possibly could to put herself in a position to parent that child and learn how to parent that child. She was no risk to the child, Jose. And that child, there was no filing until after she was incarcerated. Then she's told, your child who has these horrible injuries, that yes, you were in jail and you weren't there to take care of them. Her, excuse me. But now we're going to make sure that you can't even have any criminal rights. You can have no contact with her. You're going to be completely cut off from her. You're never going to know what happened to her. You may not even know if she may die, which is possible considering the number of medical issues she has. That seems unduly harsh. And while she is incarcerated, that was not part of what anybody who goes to jail. They know they're going to be removed from their family. They don't know that they're going to possibly not have the ability to parent their child or see their child or have contact with their anything about their child, especially a child in this fragile of a condition. I think the record is complete with a number of issues and testimony about what a good mother she is during that period of time, and even her contact, her attempts at contact from jail with her children. Even if the court finds that one of the subsections applies, the court did not, it was erred in finding the best interest for the record. It says she's a good parent. She did everything she possibly could during that time. Thank you.
Let me ask one question.
Yeah.
Subsection 7 can't apply to Jose, right?
It
wasn't long enough, was it?
It shouldn't have been. It's about 12 months, 11 months.
Okay. All right.
From the time of filing, it's probably less than that.
All right. Just wanted to make sure it's counting.
And I'd also point out, Aaron D. meaning more than just the best interest testimony, which is mandatory. If you find subsection 7. Sorry, Aaron.
That was my question.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. I understand we have a certified senior law student with this morning. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Laurel Moines, representing the appellee of State of Nebraska in this matter. I am the senior certified law clerk for the Douglas County Attorney's Office.
Ms. Lemoyne, I hate to start you off with a question, but what evidence is there in the record that subsection 6 would apply other than the fact that the mother's incarcerated?
Well, under subsection 6, if the reasonable efforts that the court provided had failed to correct the conditions which led to the children being removed, then the court may terminate parental rights.
Does subsection 6 apply if there's never been a court-ordered claim?
It was my understanding that for Isabella, the daughter, she was adjudicated prior and there was a court-ordered plan, and there were reasonable efforts provided to the mother.
Okay, and if that's true, what specific aspect of that plan did she not comply with?
She did participate in a majority of the services that she was offered. I believe the only thing she failed to complete was the parenting assessment. However...
But that's because it wasn't set up for her, isn't that right?
That's correct. However, the main reason that these children were removed from the home is that she was incarcerated and was unable to provide for the needs of these children.
And don't we have case law that says you can't terminate simply because of incarceration?
That is correct. Incarceration cannot be the sole basis for termination of parental rights. However, it is a factor to be considered, and that is not the sole basis for terminating the parental rights in this case.
What's the rest of it then?
Subsection 2, and the neglect, just the fact that she will not be able to provide for the needs of her children for the next 10 years while she's incarcerated.
Isn't that kind of circular? We can't terminate because she's incarcerated, and we're going to terminate because she can't care for her children because she's incarcerated.
Yes. I mean, it sounds a little circular, I hear you, but the case law has shown, the court has held in several different cases where they have considered the voluntary conduct that prevents a parent from functioning as a fit parent when they are incarcerated. And while the incarceration is not voluntary, her actions which resulted in her incarceration were extremely voluntary, and she chose to do those things knowing that it could possibly prevent her from being able to function as a parent.
Can you tell me whether the crime that she was convicted of, what the time frame was for that crime? Was it a single event, or was it a conspiracy that occurred over a period of months? Can you tell me what the, is that in the record? Is the indictment, the federal indictment in the record that would show what the charge is that she was convicted of?
I believe her judgment and sentence was part of the record.
Okay, the judgment and sentence, but the actual charging document, was that in the record?
I'm not certain of that, no.
What about subsection 7 as applies to Jose?
The state did not allege that subsection 7 applied to Jose in their motion for termination.
The court still ordered it, I believe, right?
I looked at the court order again today and saw that they did include, which just said, Lizabella and Jose come within sections 2, 6, and 7. I think that that's a harmless error because Jose still does come within the meaning of subsection 2.
So as far as Jose, then, your arguments about sections 2 and 6 would apply to him, is that correct?
And as far as Lizabella, obviously, subsection 7, the state provided clear and convincing evidence that she stayed in out-of-home placement for, I believe it was 19 months at the time of the hearing.
If we're going to go with the argument of whatever act she engaged in that led to her incarceration was voluntary and therefore we're going to hold that against her, when in relation to the conception, I guess, of Jose, did those acts occur? Is that in our record? When did she do what she did that led to her incarceration?
Previous to having Jose. However, under subsection 2, it's neglect of the parent to a juvenile or disabled of a juvenile. And so she had committed those acts when she was having Lizabella. And she was arrested in August of 2015. She was incarcerated at the time of August of 2015. It seemed like she was pregnant at the time because Jose was born in February of 2016. But again, the subsection 2 applies to a juvenile or the sibling of a juvenile, and she knowingly committed those acts knowing that it could placing herself in a position where she would be unable to provide for the needs of her children.
I'm looking at a case called N. Ray Zanea, a 2015 Supreme Court case that's somewhat similar on the facts. The parent in that case was convicted of a drug
distribution-related offense, and the Supreme Court upheld, it goes through the analysis under the incarceration, and upheld the termination, but they did beyond the conviction itself. They noted that there was evidence that that the father in this case, prior to his incarceration, that he was using marijuana daily with the children, and so they had some facts that, that underlied the offense that he eventually got convicted of. Do we have any of that in the record on this case as to what exactly happened that may or may not have been in the presence of, I guess, only the one child because the other one was not born yet? But do we have anything like that in the record that's similar to the Zenea case?
I don't believe we have direct evidence of the mother using drugs in the presence of the children, like exactly similar to that. I know that the mother did testify, and there was evidence that she acknowledged her drug use had been a problem, and she was, you know, remorseful of the fact that it had affected the way that she and his parents and her children, but not in those exact facts. No.
And did she subsequently do drug testing?
She did. She went through, so during that time when she was released, she completed a treatment program and did comply with some drug testing.
And they were all negative?
Correct. They were all negative. However, it's just the fact that subsection 2 that's been met in this case for both the children, you know, although the incarceration was involuntary, the conduct which resulted in her incarceration was voluntary. And when you really consider the best interests of these kids, especially considering the severity of Isabella's injuries, if we were to reverse this decision, it would end in the children being languishing in foster care for the next 10 years. So I think permanency for these children is the best interest.
Any questions? Thank you very much. Does the appellant have any time remaining? 1:35.
Your Honor, I think I failed to ask to the court to reverse the termination and send it back to Judge Slukovich. I think they failed on best interest. I appreciate the Zenea reference. I was actually on that case. But they, that is a distinction. There is absolutely no evidence in this case that prior to the filing, when the mother was incarcerated and Isabella was injured, that the mother had done anything in the presence of Isabella or her sister. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will take the case under advisement, and it is submitted. Thank you very much for being here. You're excused, and we are adjourned for the day.